transition here in the department on the new migration policy white paper and what it is that they are doing and how far are they and what else is left to do what, so that we just they also understand some sort of a program from themselves. And of course, it's, the delegation from the department is led by the acting DG, Mr. McKay. And then today we've got the project leader or the project manager for the BMA, which is finding it tough to go through the SOP. And then is here probably is one of the things that you'll be handling here to try and frustrate it and understand what is blocking it. And then that's Elroy Africa. And then we've got Umtian, Director of Policy Development, is here. And then we've got Malakate Moss, is here. And then we've got Ngasana, the Chief Director on Facilities Management. Right? Maybe those cars there, but you know what's happening at the border post. With the dilapidated buildings and all sorts of things. And then Riyad Musa is here. He's almost part of us. We're just recognizing you as coming from Home Affairs, but you're part of us. Yes, that recognition is for purposes of salary payment only. honorable members, I think from ourselves, we have got an apology from Honorable Nkomo, then also Honorable Kekana, and then Honorable Kenye. Honorable Gumede, as I said, I think he should be in another committee this morning. But if there is anything that requires him, then I think he's available, but he's trying to give you some other things on that other committee. Then we are expecting Honorable Sobe to arrive a little bit later. Honorable Hussein, Honorable Fiegler, you know anything? Okay, then let's hope that he's still on his way.
I think he's been captured.
Okay. I don't know. I just hear from you. But it would be very interesting to know who captured me. I just hope that it's not white monopoly capital.
Good comeback.
Yes. Honorable members, I think the department should be ready. I hope that they have been assisted to be ready. I'm not sure whether the lighting that we have here, anything can happen to it, just to improve the screen. But otherwise, honorable members have also hard copy presentations. If it is possible only to switch those ones on that portion, then it will be nice. Not everything else. Can we discriminate the lights on top?
Yeah.
Leave this one, this light on, and deal with those other. Yeah, better. Yeah, it's far better now. Thank you. You can proceed, Mr. McKay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Good morning to you all. I will be doing the presentation, which is really just an update on the progress of implementing the white paper on international migration. I will deal with the contents of the presentation now. I'll give a background we have a look at our medium-term targets, because the implementation of the white paper is included in our APP, or our annual performance plan. I will then give a progress report of policy and strategic intervention. We then have a slide that deals with key ongoing interventions that we have isolated because of its strategic nature. And then we look at further development of policy interventions, and we'll talk to some, and I think that is where we will end. Chairperson, the purpose then is to provide the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee with an update on the progress made by the Department of Home Affairs towards the implementation of the new white paper on international migration. Honourable members will recall that during the 2016-17 financial year, Home Affairs produced a white paper which was approved by Cabinet on the 29th of March 2017 and gazetted on the 28th of July 2017 for public notice. The Department also briefed the Portfolio Committee on the key elements of the white paper on the 13th of June 2017. The white paper recommends policy and strategic intervention in the following policy areas: the management of admission and departures, the management of residency and naturalization, the management of international migrants with skills and capital, the management of ties with domestic and expatriates, the management of international migration in the African context, the management of asylum seekers and refugees, the management of the integration process for international migrants, as well as the management of law enforcement. The white paper provides a new policy framework that will guide a comprehensive review of immigration and related legislation. Those elements of the white paper that require only administrative action are already being implemented. However, those elements of the white paper that require major changes will not be implemented immediately pending the finalization of the new legislation. So the issues where we would have progress in our report here would be those issues or elements of the white paper that require only administrative action. The others then would have to wait until we have the required new legislation to be able to implement it. If we have a look at our medium-term targets in our APP from 2017 to 2020, we have three targets. One is the immigration and refugee policy developed and legislation reviewed. During 2017-18, this current financial year, we would have immigration and refugee bills approved by our Minister for Submission to Cabinet. And the progress here is that the structure and outline of the bills have been developed and approved at a departmental level and will now be taken to our to our new Minister for approval before we take it to Cabinet. The target for 2018-19 is that these bills, both the immigration and the refugee bill, will be submitted to Parliament for approval, will be taken to the parliamentary process, and we hope that in 1920 that we will then have a new Immigration Act and a new Refugees Act based on the white paper. With regard, the other target that we have that's related to our white paper is that we will have a border management agency established and operationalized during 2017-18. Our target is to have a roadmap approved by our minister, and to date, a draft BMA roadmap has been developed and is being processed internally for the minister's approval. During 2018-19, the BMA will be operational according to the BMA roadmap, which talks to phases of implementation. And during 1920, it will also be implemented according to the BMA roadmap. The other issue, the target chairperson is also closely linked to the objectives of our white paper, and that is the establishment of asylum processing centers closer to the country's borders. During 2017-18, the target is to have a feasibility report on the establishment of processing centers submitted to National Treasury for approval. And to date, the land for the construction of the processing centers has since been secured, and we are in the process of finalizing the feasibility report. In 2018-19, a bid will be issued and evaluated to obtain transactional advisory to approval from National Treasury, and during 1920, transactional advisory three obtained prior to concluding TPP agreements for the establishment of these particular centers. Chairperson, I will now look at the progress report for policy and strategic intervention. I will start with the first one that speaks to the management of admissions and departures. The policy objective here was to strengthen a strategic, modern, integrated and risk-based approach in managing a secure and efficient movement of people, goods and conveyances. There were a number of policy interventions here. The first one was the establishment of the Border Management Authority. Chair, with regard to progress, the BMA bill is currently being processed in the NCOP, whereafter it will be returned to the National Assembly for final adoption. And as alluded to by Honourable Chairperson, that we have a few hiccups over there in the NCOP, and we hope that the portfolio committee will be able to assist us in smoothing those speed bumps that we have encountered there. The second one, Chairperson, is the relaxation of visa requirements for certain nationals and categories of international migrants, including frequent travelers, academics and business persons. This chair does not require any legislature, it is an administrative thing, and we already approve, South Africa already provides for the granting of long-term multiple entry visas for up to 10 years to academics and business persons from the African continent and BRICS countries. And we have now also rolled it out to other countries, Chairperson, with which we have agreements to issue them with long-term visas to enter South Africa. The third one was the externalization of borders through the advanced processing, the passenger name records, airline liaison officers, and the capturing of biometric data at our ports of entry. Chairperson, with regard to this, we already have introduced the APP in the maritime environment, and all shipping liners now have also can also be pre-cleared before they enter South Africa, and we have rolled out our biometric data to selected land ports of entry. And we are at 50% utilization of this at our port of entry, and we hope that by the end of the financial year, we will be taking biometrics at 100% at our beach ports of entry. And then for further rollout to our smaller ports of entry in the next financial year. Chairperson, we also have a policy intervention to rationalize and designate ports of entry. With regard to this, we have had a document that served before our EXCO and on its way to our minister, and we will be briefing our new minister with regard to the outcome of our study to rationalize certain ports of entry in South Africa. The establishment of one-stop border post. Chairperson, currently a one-stop border post is being piloted in the Lubombo port of entry, and also we have started talking to Zimbabwe around the conversion of Bybridge into a one-stop border post, and we hope also to have an agreement on that on the table soon in terms of how we are going to proceed with the establishment of a one-stop border post at Bybridge. The other one, Chairperson, is the regulation of community border crossings. Here, Chairperson, we have already piloted a community crossing point in Sidi Lamulomo in 2016, which connects a community that is resident in the Northwest Province in Botswana, as well as in the Northwest Province. And that community crossing point is working, is really assisting the communities there to keep in touch without them having to travel hundreds of miles to get to a border post to be able to cross and travel 100 miles again to the same area where they have just, like, always seen each other across the fence. So the border community crossing point, the pilot is working very well. The people that are using it is only from the community. We have a biometric system over there that only allows you to travel in and out with your passport, of course, only when you are pre-registered on our movement control system. So you need to give a biometric, and the biometric will then tell us that this is a resident in the village and not someone else. So we have not registered anyone else except the villages in that particular area, and it helps them to manage them to cross into South Africa, to buy food, to visit family, to attend funerals, weddings, and all of those types of activities. Chairperson, we then also have the process is also underway to establish a second crossing point in the Mangudi area in KwaZulu-Natal, where we have a similar situation of a community traveling to a country in Mozambique as well as in South Africa, and we are looking at a similar arrangement there. Chairperson, with regard to the management of residency and naturalization, the policy objective here was to ensure that the process of granting residence and citizenship status to foreign nationals is based on strategic and security considerations and the national priorities of South Africa. The policy intervention here was that there should be no automatic progression from residency to citizenship in law or in practice. That is, the granting of residency and citizenship should be dealing. This section, Chairperson, is subject to legislative amendments and will only be able to be implemented once we have legislative amendments. The permanent second one was that the permanent residence permit will be replaced by a long-term residence visa in order to dispel a misconception that immigrants have a constitutional right to progress towards citizenship status on the basis of a number of years spent in the country. This section is also subject to legislative amendments. And the third one was that holders of business and critical skills visas are recommended for long-term resident visas. This section is subject to legislative amendments. And the granting of citizenship to foreign nationals should be considered as being exceptional and requiring an executive decision of the minister. This is also this section is also subject to legislative amendments. Honourable Chairperson, and a study is underway on the exceptional conditions under which foreigners may qualify for citizenship. With regard to the management of international migration of skills and capital, the policy objective here is to increase South Africa's international competitiveness for critical skills and investment. The policy intervention here was the introduction of a points-based system to determine the eligibility criteria for long-term residence visas. As I had said, that the study is underway on how South Africa will use the points-based system to attract skilled migrants. This section is subject to to legislative amendments as well. The second policy intervention was the utilization of long-term residence visa to assess the high-value migrants, and the granting of critical skills and business visas will cater for family members. The current legislation already caters for family members for holders of business and critical skills visas. The other policy intervention, Honorable Chair, is that international students who graduate with in-critical skills occupation will qualify to apply for long-term residence visas. In 2016, the department issued a directive which allows students who are studying towards certain occupations that are on the critical skills list to apply for permanent residence permits. And the last intervention here is a differentiated skills transfer mechanism will be introduced to cater for different working conditions. A differentiated skills transfer mechanism is subject as well to legislative amendment. Chair, with regard to the fourth area, is the management of ties with South African expats. The policy objective here is to proactively manage and harness emigration for developmental purposes. The policy intervention here was to establish an institutional capacity within the state to proactively manage and harness emigration for development. The other was that we needed to have mandatory registration of South Africans who intend to emigrate or those living abroad. We would need to read the review of the South African Passport and Travel Documents Act of 1994 to make the registration of expats mandatory. There would need to be state support for citizens who intend to emigrate for study, work, and investment purposes. We need to have incentive schemes to motivate South African expats to continue to contribute in the country with regard to skills and investment, and we would need to establish a diaspora ambassadorial and knowledge network, as well as reintegration programs for expats wishing to return. The progress status here, Chairperson, is that the department has initiated engagements with DIRCO and Brand South Africa on the scope of the emigration policy, roles of key stakeholders, and the institutional mechanisms for managing emigration. With regard to managing international migration within the African context, the policy objective here is to ease cross-border movement for African citizens and provide a legal permitting route for SADC economic migrants. The policy intervention in this area is the elimination of visa requirements for African citizens in a secure manner. Chair, South Africa already provides for the granting of long-term multiple entry visas to academic and business persons from the African continent and BRICS countries, as I reported earlier. And the granting of a long-term introduction of a SADC special work quota visa for immediate neighboring countries. The SADC work SMME and cross-border trading visas are the subject of the legislative amendment and will only be able to be implemented if we have a legal regime for it. And also we would need to review existing bilateral labor agreements in line with the new policy. Chairperson, with regard to the management of asylum seekers and refugees, the policy objective here is to provide protection and basic services to asylum seekers and refugees in a humane and secure manner. The policy interventions is the establishment of asylum seeker processing centers closer to the borderline. The process indicates that a feasibility study, including a financial model for building asylum processing centers, completed and submitted to Minister for approval. Asylum seekers, the policy intervention, the second one is that asylum seekers would not have the automatic right to work for study since the basic needs will be catered for in the processing centers. The rights to work and study are addressed in the current refugee regulations. that will serve before this committee as well. And the refugees may apply for long-term resident visas after 10 continuous years of living in South Africa as a refugee. The conditions under which refugees may apply for long-term residence are also the subject of legislative amendments. Naturalization will be de-linked from the immigration and refugee regime and will be prescribed in the framework governing citizenship and civil rights in South Africa. And the last intervention is that a bilateral and multilateral approach will be advocated to establish cooperation with asylum producing and transit countries. In this regard, a draft SADC migration strategy has been developed and it incorporates refugee issues. Chair, with regard to the management of the integration process for international migrants, the policy objective is to establish a secure, strategic, and integrated approach for the integration of international migrants into communities. The policy intervention in this area was the integration policy applies to all international migrants who are in the country legally and who are holders of residence visas and permits, and that a national strategy for refugee integration will be developed in line with the non-encampment policy. A draft refugee, with regard to progress in this regard, Chair, a draft refugee integration strategy was developed through the Interministerial Committee on Migration. The strategy is being revised in line with the white paper, and it will be submitted to the Minister for approval by the 31st of March 2018. The other policy intervention is for mechanisms to be put in place to facilitate provision of social security benefits to qualifying international migrants in line with the Social Assistance Act number 13 of 2004. The existing legislation makes provision for the granting of social security to refugees and qualified permanent residence holders. The policy intervention on the other policy intervention is that migration advisory services and a migration desk at local government levels will be established to advise international migrants on relevant services and information, as well as the establishment of intersectoral and intergovernmental institutional machinery with strong coordination and accountability mechanisms need to be established at a national, provincial, and at a local level. The establishment, with regard to progress, Chair, the establishment of migration advisory services and institutional machinery will be addressed in the new legislation. The last area, Chair, is the management of law enforcement, and this policy objective is to reduce irregular migration and improve compliance with immigration and related legislation and bylaws. The policy intervention here is to have a risk-based deportation strategy which will prioritize deportation of high-risk over low-risk migrants. The introduction of returns agreements with neighboring countries, the laying of criminal charges against repeat offenders and those who do not cooperate with deportation notices. You need to establish immigration repatriation centers at a provincial level, and we need to prioritize investigation and caseflow management of immigration-related cases. And the issuing of marriage clearance certificates will be issued to foreign nationals who intend to enter into spousal relationships, marriage or life partnerships with citizens. With regard to progress in this regard, Chairperson, a draft strategy has been developed with regard to the risk-based deportation, and it is being workshopped internally prior to its submission to the Minister for approval by the 31st of March 2018. A returns clause has been incorporated on the new bilateral agreements with Botswana and Mozambique, and we intend to do it with all other SADC countries where we have agreements with them that they will take back their nationals that have become undocumented or do not have immigration status in South Africa. We already have that in agreements with Botswana and Mozambique. The existing legal framework provides for the prosecution of illegal foreigners. And with regard to immigration repatriation centers, these will depend on the outcome of the feasibility study and availability of funds. The issuing of marriage clearance certificates is also the subject of legislative amendments, Chairperson. We will then move on to some key ongoing interventions, which I already spoke to, but this just deals with it in more detail. The first one is the establishment of the Border Management Authority. Chair will remember that in June 2013, Cabinet endorsed the establishment of the Border Management Authority in South Africa through a legislative framework and premised on a new policy paradigm of integrated border management. Cabinet further mandated the Department of Home Affairs to lead to the establishment process. In 2014, Cabinet endorsed the vision for the Border Management Authority, and that is that the Border Management Authority will assume border law enforcement functions at ports of entry and along the country's borderline. In 2015, Cabinet endorsed the introduction of the Border Management Authority Bill into Parliament. The bill was endorsed by the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs in March 2017. The bill was further endorsed by the National Assembly in June 2017. And the bill is currently being processed in the National Council of Provinces, where after it will be returned to the National Assembly for final adoption. With regard to the preparation for the establishment of the Border Management Agency, the following documents have been prepared in respect, prepared in respect of the establishment of the authority and are currently being processed for approval within the department. A draft Border Management Authority blueprint. It outlines the ideal end state of the authority. We have a draft BMA roadmap. It articulates the milestones and timeframes for the various phases of the border management establishment until the realization of the BMA's ideal end state. And we have a draft BMA change management strategy, which focuses on change management tasks and activities to ensure a smooth transition in the transfer of resources to the Border Management Authority, and also support the BMA roadmap with regard to the operationalization of the BMA. It is envisaged that the BMA will be established, Chairperson, in 2019. Now, Chair, we have received NCOP, the Select Committee, a program, and it seems we have a concern, Chair, that it seems as if this goal is not passed, will not be deliberated by them during this financial year, Chair, and it is a worrying aspect. That they will not be dealing with this bill. We hope that we will be briefing our new minister to engage the select committee, and we would also appreciate if the portfolio committee would also assist us in an engagement to see how we can have this bill back on track, get it back on track. Chair, with regard to the establishment of a one-stop border post, the Department of Home Affairs is responsible for overseeing the submission of the draft one-stop border post policy to Cabinet for approval. Before the draft policy is submitted to Cabinet, a socio-economic impact assessment needs to be undertaken. Considering the need for full-time subject matter experts to assist with the preparation of the assessment, the PMO is currently in the process of securing a service provider to undertake the socio-economic impact assessment study. Chair, since feedback on the establishment of asylum processing centers closer to the borderline, land for the construction of the processing center has since been secured. A feasibility study to determine the cost and other related implications was conducted during the 16-17 financial year. And the progress here, Chair, is that that a completed and comprehensive feasibility has been provided to the department through the appointed company. Further study to determine the funding options and models has since been sanctioned by the department through the National Treasury processes. The department has held engagements with National Treasury to discuss various funding models and options to be considered. Essentially, there are three proposals under the review. The first one is a triple P model funded through derived revenue generation. The second is also a triple P model, which is funded through on a fixed term repayment model. And the third is procurement through public works. Option two, Honorable Chair, is the preferred solution given the flexibility against time and funding, whilst option one is excluded as the business process of a refugee processing center does not support revenue generation. And option three would not be able to support the envisaged timeline of the project. The projected cost for the project ranges from 266 million to 298 million, depending on how the phases through which it is going to be implemented. Chairperson, with regard to other areas of policy intervention, the following aspects of the white paper require further development. The first being criteria and preconditions for the establishment of ports of entry. We need criteria for procedures for providing protection and identification services to vulnerable groups, that's elderly children, the elderly children, disabled and pregnant women. We need to conceptualize a point-based system for skilled international migrants. We need to conceptualize a risk-based deportation policy and strategy. We need to conceptualize the issue of a whole-of-government approach for managing migration. We need to review citizenship and marriage policies regarding the grounds for granting citizenship to foreign nationals. We need to establish an interdepartmental institutional mechanism for managing emigration, and establish an intergovernmental institutional mechanism for managing integration of migrants in South Africa. It is envisaged that a consolidated report on the above policy intervention will be submitted to the Minister for approval by the 31st of March 2018. Chair, while the Department of Home Affairs has made serious advances in developing a new vision for a future fit and responsive international migration policy, divergent and often conflicting views of the management of international migration persist. In order to facilitate a national conversation on the new policy, the department is also undertaking the following dialogues with thought leaders across various sectors and disciplines. We are having dialogues with institutions of higher learning. The purpose of such dialogues is to engage with scholars and students of international migration. We are having dialogues with Chapter 9 institutions and human rights organizations. the purpose of this dialogue is to engage with human rights activists and organizations on how to manage international migration in a safe, orderly, and regular manner, and in line with the African Development Agenda. We would be having dialogue with business and labor sectors. The purpose of this dialogue is to engage with business and labor formations on how to use international migration for economic development. And dialogue in partnership with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. The purpose of this dialogue is to engage with African heads of mission on how to improve collaboration on regional and international migration. And we are continuing with dialogue in partnership with the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs and South African and the South African Local Government Association. The purpose of this dialogue is to engage national, provincial, and local government on the integration of international migrants in South Africa. These dialogues, Chairperson, are continuing. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That brings me to the end of my presentation of how far we are implementing the white paper on international migration. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. McKay, for taking us through. It looks like there is still a lot to be done. There is still a lot of thinking, processing, and putting all systems in order to align anything to this new policy. I just hope that we have got enough people that can write, enough people that can think, enough people that can integrate, and all that. There is a lot to be done. You said that 2019 the establishment of the VMA, but how do you define establishing VMA when you put a date of 2019? I think that is one of the things that you just need to clarify, because once the bill is signed by the president and the effective date is known, then that means the VMA is established in terms of law. Then you have the other part that talks to yourself, where you start saying, you know, this is now what I call a VMA. So, in 2019, what is there that you are talking about establishing the VMA? Because it looks like you may have so many years to go before anybody sees something called VMA. You may see, may have many, many years, because there will be a lot of collating of a lot of budgetary allocations that are scattered left and right, in order to channel them towards the implementation of the VMA. So there is a lot to be done, and it looks like next year when we come here, we are just coming to work international migration policy almost every week. If we have to follow the dialogues that you want to have, and then we may need to know what it is that you are trying to do. Honorable members, we have had the acting DG. He has taken us through the areas that require attention, and there are matters of the policy which already they've started to integrate into their own work up to now, and then there are those that have to await for new policies to be done. Others have to wait for the legislation to be promulgated as well. And and the date on which the bills talking about is talking about 2019-2020 for the new Immigration Act and new Refugees Act 2020. So an explanation will be needed whether there will be a need for an amendment of this for now to hold on or what. Madam Buddha, and then we'll start, and then Honorable Hussein will follow, and then Tope will speak, Rafiki will just speak, and then Muniti will speak in that order. So welcome, Honorable Speaker.
Only now, Chair.
Thanks for having been uncaptured.
Thank you very much. I would like to thank the XMCG for the presentation, which has been clearly outlined, but I do have some concerns, Jefferson. I think taking from what we have raised, I do also have concerns, because if I was listening carefully, there is quite a lot of issues that would require the amendment of the legislation. And to me, it seems that there is a serious problem or a challenge, because we are aware that there are so many challenges that are facing the department. There are so many complaints that are raised by the foreign nationals against the department. So if the issue of the legislation, or some of the issues, the majority of the issues will require a legislative amendment, but there seems to be no effort, the effort that seems to address the legislation issue as early as possible. Because if we leave here, I think by next year, I don't think we'll be having some much time to deal with the legislative issues if they don't bring them this early in 2018, or at least submit them towards the end of this term, at least. So that is my comment, Chairperson. For instance, just to cite an example, the issue of the spousal permits and so on, there are so many complaints about that, to such an extent that some of them, they just, the department, in fact, the department that advises them to take an asylum seeker's permit, I don't know what is the problem on that one. Why are they not processing their permits in a correct way? So the other issue is around the 2063 vision. So in an attempt to realize that vision, what more can be done to harmonize the various southern African migration laws in a way that fairly shares financial and social benefits and burdens between the countries? Because if that issue is not being addressed, it's going to put the country in a predicament area. Then the last question, Chair, for this round is about this application from the National Treasury that the Border Management Authority may only be funded over a long period. That is a problem, Chair. It's really, really a problem. But we need to check from the department itself what are the aspects
that will need to be prioritized then. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Honorable Hussein.
Chair, thank you very much. I want to make a comment firstly about the white paper overall, which I must say that I think that there are, in the whole basket of policy interventions that's there in the document, there are some very positive ones, some of which we've argued for previously, for example, the SMME visa and those type of things. So there are a number of very good, very positive policy interventions in the document. But equally so, there's also some very scary suggestions in that document, which I'll try and raise questions around those ones in particular. Chair, the one thing that that sticks out quite glaringly for me in the white paper is this whole notion of how we measure immigrants, foreigners who come into South Africa. And there tends to be a culture of measuring people from where they come rather than what contribution they make to the economy. When you look at some of those tables in the document itself, in the top 20 countries, it's very clear that the policy interventions that we've drafted is quite clearly developed and designed to respond to where the demand is, rather than what contribution people are making to the economy. Now, all over the world, governments do the opposite. They measure what contribution that people can make and what contribution, what potential contribution they can make, and then they design their immigration policies to attract those people. A good example is a place like Dubai, for example, Mauritius is another one of those countries that relax their requirements in order to be able to attract those people. I'm not entirely satisfied that the white paper does exactly that. On the contrary, what we're doing is we're making it that much more difficult. When you do actually measure the interventions that we're putting in, we are going to be increasing the amount of barriers and hurdles that we're going to put in the way of people who genuinely want to come and make a long-term investment in the country. Just one example. In Mauritius, for example, if $500,000 will give you permanent residence, which is why they are able to grow the economy at such a massive rate over a very short space of time. We're doing the complete opposite. And that's just the point that I want to make, to be mindful of it. If we do want to grow the economy, there's opportunities there in the world, and it's, my colleague has just not disturbed me now. If we do want to grow our economy and attract the skills and attract the money, then we must be able to change our approach. And I'm afraid that part in our white paper is missing. So on that point, Chair, what I'd like to hear from the department is that, have they done any studies on what contribution to the existing permanent residents, for example, make to the economy of South Africa? If we do that study, I think you will realize that there's something of value there. Because what the paper is now arguing for is that the automatic progression, for example, from permanent residency to citizenship, I get the point. But that on its own is going to be a disincentive. It will be a disincentive. And my other concern is that the department also already has quite a massive backlog on PR permit applications. And a direct question is that, are those applications that are in the system already going to be dealt with, before the new system is introduced? And I take it that we have to still introduce legislation for that to become effective, and we'll deal with the specifics when that opportunity comes up. But I just like to hear what the department's forward planning is in terms of clearing out those backlogs, so that those people who are in the system already will not be disenfranchised by the introduction of a new law. Chair, this thing about the asylum seeker centres. Our current system, we're struggling to process all of those applications. There are massive backlogs. I think we know the details already. I'm not going to spend time on that. There's very clear indication the department can't manage the current demand on applications. And if you look at the in the white paper, it shows there's about 62,000 applications in 2015, if I'm not mistaken. And we're now suggesting that we're going to provide accommodation for people at the border post so they don't enter the country. And on the basis of historical data, if there's 62,000 applications in 1 year, the department's suggesting we're going to provide that level of accommodation. I'm reluctant. I can't see how that's possible for us to be able to achieve that. And how then do you deal with a situation when there are emergency situations in our neighboring countries, like we've had in Zimbabwe a few years ago, and then there's a massive influx of people because of the conditions that they are living in? What's our plan to be able to deal with that? Because then we're not going to have the accommodation. Are we even going to be increasing, have at refugee camps in our borders? Because the existing accommodation is not going to be able to deal with those emergency situations. And there's nothing in the white paper that suggests how we'll respond to that kind of situation. I'm very fascinated by the proposals to manage immigration and the registration of people who immigrate to other parts of the country, other parts of the world. And I'm not sure what kind of information the department is going to be looking for. Is it just a case of where you're going, which country you're going to go to? To what degree, what is the intention of the department in terms of managing immigration? If you can just give a direct answer in terms of to what degree you're going to be asking for information, because then you go into all sorts of privacy rights and all of that kind of thing. So I'd like to hear just the response on that, please. On that same point, the incentive schemes for immigrants to invest in South Africa, I think is positive. But I'd just like to hear what the thoughts are in the department on what type of investment schemes, unless you haven't worked it out yet, that would encourage people to invest in South Africa, especially those who have already immigrated. So if the department doesn't mind just expanding on this marriage clearance certificate, I find that quite funny actually. Not only now will you have to go and ask the father for the hand in marriage, you also have to go and ask the minister for approval. If a foreigner wants to come into South Africa and marry somebody, it doesn't mean you're going to get a marriage clearance certificate before you even maybe say, will you marry me? Yes, please. There's all the Bola opportunities and so on. But this, I think, I'd really like to hear what the motivation for that is. I understand what the problems are. I'm not sure that this is the solution to it, to get somebody to apply for a clearance certificate before they ask the South African lovely lady to marry me with me after the minister. How then do you even manage that? I mean, that's what this thing is proposing. If a South African man or woman goes overseas and marries a foreigner there, does that person still then have to get a marriage clearance certificate? How are we going to manage that? Because it would mean then that you can apply that rule only when the person is in the country and not out of the country. But maybe I'm misunderstanding it, and now I'll wait for the response. Chair, I was very happy to see in this cost projections when it comes to the asylum seeker centres, and it gives us an opportunity to really understand the extent to which the department is moving in. But I would be so grateful if the department can give us a similar kind of cost projection on the BMA. We've asked for it over and over, and there isn't really solid figure forthcoming, even some level of estimate. There's lots of guesstimates. So you've done all sorts of projections and timelines on the BMA, but you haven't given us any information on what you envisage this whole monster to cost us. Then, Chair, I see that the department had a number of dialogues and engagements, which is quite positive, but what I see is missing from there, unless it's not specifically spelled out, the dialogues and engagements with NGOs representing asylum seekers and refugee associations. That also going to be included in the process. And lastly, just to add my voice to the concern that you and other colleagues have raised in terms of timelines for implementing some of these policy interventions through legislation. I do agree we need to move with speed on this if you really want to get it done, because Chair, I'm not sure, but I think by 2019 you're going to have a new government and none of these things are going to be implemented.
Yeah.
That's a problem. So I just want to encourage the department, if they really want to get this thing done, they're going to like move chop, eh? Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. The only problem is that in 2019 it will be one of the same government. So there won't be any interruption.
By the way, thank you, Chairperson. I'm no longer sure. Thanks to the acting DDC.
Oh, the acting DDC.
Yes, they've implemented the correct one. Yeah. So I know, Chair, when you're angry with me, you'll call me Sophie. When you are not angry, you'll call me Mkhalipi. Just call me Mkhalipi.
I'll do so.
Okay.
I just hope that you won't change the same again.
You'll need a clearance certificate.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, acting DG. You'll just forgive me when I'm all over. You know how we do things as activists. We are not like you, who have certificates of academy. We are not educated, we just want to check things on our way. Chairperson, first of all, I want to get a clarity on page 12, if I may. Just a clarity. Establishment of asylum seekers processing center closer to borderline. Then number two, it says that asylum seekers will not have the automatic right to work or study since their basic needs will be catered for in the processing centers. I just want to get that clarity, because if you talk about the right to work or study, and then you also talk about their basic needs that will be catered for in the processing centers, I just need more clarity. What does that mean? Are they going to be catered in those centers? They are going to be educated there? They are going to be giving work there in those centers? I just need that clarity on the transition. And then I think I agree with the previous speakers, especially my colleague here who is going to be the Minister of Home Affairs in 2019. Honorable Hussein.
Oh.
Yeah, and the chair will be just a backbench on the or a councillor somewhere in the rural area in Mpumalanga. Just to check the capacity of the department acting DG. Because as we speak, we do have such departments that are dealing with refugees and foreigners. I think one is in Etekwini, is next to the right, next to my house, in Moore Road, if I'm not mistaken. It happens that I pass there quite often, and I think the queue is also worrying. That at some point I got hold of a person who is in charge there. I called her. She told me that, no, there is it's an influx of our African brothers who want to come in numbers every day. And then there is one in Bramfontein, whereby our EFF offices are on the same floor. So it happened that I see that office every day. So I'm worried, if are we going to, as a department, if capacity-wise, are we going to copy with all what we are proposing in this document? And just want to agree with the chair for the first time that it seems as if there's a long way to go if you want to implement what you are proposing on this SSME. On page 11, which is quite correct, you are talking about elimination of visa requirements for African citizens in a secure manner, right? And then, as far as I remember, there is, in the white paper, there is something called a principle of a safe country principle in the migration white paper. And then now I just want you to unpack for me, if you talk about elimination of visa requirement for Africans, of which I do accept and I do welcome, you know, it has been my position as the FF in the committee. When you talk about asylums, when you talk about refugees, I always say that in any case, these borders are not our own making. These are the colonization borders. So now we are talking about elimination of visa requirements for African citizenship. So my question is that, do you have a tangible engagement with in at a level of the AU? I saw in your one of the papers we're talking about started countries whereby you have some engagement with those countries, but now there is an AU and there is an agenda for AU in 2063. Whereby I think, that is my own opinion, if we can have such engagement at an AU level as a continent, because to me, DJ, we can call these African brothers asylum seekers, refugees, migrants, and so on. The fact of the matter is that they are coming to South Africa to look for green pastures. We can't run away from that fact. So what is needed now as a country to manage this situation? Because now we have our own problems in South Africa. So they come here to look for jobs, and you know, because those people who are still owning the means of production, they don't want to pay. So they tend just to employ them and give them some peanuts. On doing that, our own people in the country, they are suffering while we have the unemployment as a country. So to me, I think the department in this white paper, we need to address such things to say, how are we going to manage this situation? Because it's getting out of hand. You know, when you come out here in parliament, when you go to Acacia, here in this place, I don't know how to call it, the space, there are a lot of our African brothers there. You can see what is only them. There's only them there. There is a lot. I mean, you go to KZN, you go to where you live, Honorable Hussein, in Point. I remember during the xenophobia, when the South Africans, they said, then let us just march against these Nigerians, especially Nigerians. You know what they did? I think DG is privy to that information as well. They came out in numbers. They said, no, bring it on. It was Africans against South Africa. And then the South Africans, they said, no, it's going to be a war. So I'm saying they're here in numbers in the country. And it seems as if it's the government. I don't know if it's your department or which department, they need to do something. But really something must be done. Something must be done in terms of the paper. I'm not saying what you are mentioning here is not going to help, but as the chair is saying that there is a lot, I agree with the chair. We need to do something. Without telling them, without saying to them, we don't need them. We do need them. It's our kids, brothers. I also believe that they also have to welcome us when we go there. I know during the struggle, we have they have welcomed us in Tanzania. They even give us money to spend as South Africans. But now is another era. So it needs a clear direction. I'm happy that the DG also mentioned that he's still going to meet with the new minister. But I don't know for how long, because we don't know if this minister is going to last, if we're going to have a new minister. But good luck for you, DG. It's your job. You must... on the other hand, the other thing that is it's worrying me, there is an increased range of security measures being introduced in the immigration and refugee legislation. And then the question also arises, how are we going to manage this thing that we said we need to attract the skilled migrants in this country? Because it seems as if we do want to come with some intervention, as we are saying on your presentation, is policy intervention. But it seems that as we are very slow to intervene. That is my worry, That is my worry. As the department as well, we do have to come with those policy intervention. But, I mean, I think we are behind. The situation here, it dictates that it's worse. So if you can clarify to me, what is the department planning to do? Yeah, thanks, Chair. For now, let me just pause this.
Thank you very much, and this is Honorable Rupert. watch out in 2019 that I'm not the first Prime Minister of South Africa.
And I will say.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the presentation.
You want the application form?
Yeah, I think it's very nice for those who dream. But those who dream during the day, they are very dangerous. They will take us back.
In Johannesburg.
Back to apartheid.
Johannesburg and Johan.
Hey, I'm supposed to be now.
Back to apartheid. So just dream.
All over.
But you must know those who are following you, they are going backwards. Thank you.
All those things belong to
me. Jim, we thank you for the presentation. On the white paper on internationality in migration.
Yes, some people must stand up and do for their own, but where do they get the money? You go to the bank for money for business,
on
they
slide
can't
8, bullet number 2.
Don't talk about bullets.
Slide 8, bullet number 2.
Make me scared.
this permanent residence, I just wanted to check, DG, clarity on this. There are those who have obtained the permanent residence. Are we presently? So those who are having them now, are we going to go back and say that you have to be able to receive the long, what is it? You must have
the long-term
residence. And then on, you know, I was watching Ketchup? And I saw...
Is it Ketchup in the restaurant?
Is it Ketchup? I don't know.
Or what?
And then there was this a guy, a foreign national, who is married to a South African with a baby. And that guy, he was facing some challenges. And he says that the Department of Home Affairs is refusing to, is refusing the baby to be registered with his name. So I really wanted to check what are the challenges there. Because with the Ketchup, it was really to show the difficulties that foreign nationals are experiencing with the Home Affairs. And slide 11, bullet number 2, about, you know, I'm very skeptical. Skeptical about the so-called this bogus doctors. You have seen that what the housing department of health, they managed to catch up most of these bogus doctors. Really should we bring people must come in our country to come and really do such gruesome issues. You know what they are doing? The priest, I think, I don't know whether he's still in prison. So what are we saying about it? Don't say that we don't want our foreign brothers and sisters. But you can see this one, they're taking an advantage, coming to do some gruesome, terrible things in our country. So how do you really try to check the rotten potato to the best potato? It's also painful, really painful what we are seeing. I for one, I also, you know, the one, this bogus doctor, he writes on his wall, doctor so and so and so, and I went there, I knocked, the place was dirty like a pigsty. Like a pigsty, but he calls himself Dr. Bongolozo.
Bongo?
Bongolozo.
The new minister?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
So I was just asking myself, really, what is
Department of Home Affairs, despite of really others coming and knocking in our doors, asking that they want to have proper kind of papers here in South Africa. But it's painful, but I'm sorry, I'm the one who really confronted that one of the bonga stops.
Bongo.
And also on slide 11, on the bullet number 3, from the bottom, I just wanted to check, to check the clarity. I request clarity, especially on the small medium enterprises. So what are we saying about that? Because even those small medium enterprises, they are the ones who are bringing drugs. So what kind of, if the person is coming as a small medium enterprise in South Africa, what are we saying with it? And how much capital is he bringing? Is he bringing drugs in South Africa? So really, if we can have some kind of closure, because it's too open, it's too ambiguous. Okay, I just wanted to check also the BMA. Really, we want to see running. What are the challenges there in the NCOP? We want to see that BMA running, and the daydreamers who are so dangerous, so that they can be able to see what this government actually wants to achieve, and the daydreamers, they must just go and relax. I thank you.
I think the 2019 is just a little bit far, and then it will come, and then I think we'll ring the bell so that everybody is on the mark, and then. For today is the migration policy. Let's proceed with it. Next is the Honorable Minister.
Yeah, but Chair, we need to share my time. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation, Mr. Nakwe. We can see that a lot of work has been done to try and address the different gaps and loopholes in our policies. Then, my first question, Chair, will be a clarity-seeking question on slide 14. The first line on the under the policy intervention, that is a risk-based deportation strategy. Deportation of high risk overload. Then I would like to know, who do you consider as low risk and high risk migrants? And also, what strategy do you use to categorize them? I really don't understand. If maybe you can clarify. On slide 14 also, the second bullet, maybe, Chair, if Mr. McKay can also unpack what is included in the returns agreement with the neighboring countries. Then to also check whether in your ongoing engagement with different stakeholders and also as the department, do you consider reviewing all these old convention that does not take our country forward? Then, Chair, my last question would be, in the process of consulting your stakeholders on the migration policy, what were the major changes that occurred between the initial green paper and the final
No, thank you very much for being economic and actually knowing the agenda item of today. The next is Honorable Stigler. Proceed.
Sabotage. I'm taking over the AFS, don't worry. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Actually, I don't have lots of questions because my colleagues have asked those questions, then I have to scratch them. That's a very good thing when you're the last person to ask questions. Good morning, Acting DG. Sometimes I don't like to talk about acting. I'll be happy when I see a DG because you're going to be very responsible as a DG. My worry, Chairperson, is that we have lots of policies, very good ones, but the problem is implementation. I know there's a lot of work that is done in the BMA. There were lots of problems, and I'm praying that all ministers that are involved in this border management agency will be able to work with the person that is going to be responsible, that is Home Affairs. So since Home Affairs is going to oversee this border management thing. On slide 14, Chairperson, I just want to understand, you talk about management of enforcement. Now, each and every border you go to, there's shortage of staff, especially the inspectorate. Now, how are we going to deal with this? Did we look at the budget, and can we manage to run a smooth process with the border management? The other question that is making me confused, because you've got a proposal on strategical selecting who qualifies for permanent residence. Won't this add another burden in the administration? Or will this not go against the policy objective of attracting scarce skills? The last question, Chairperson, that I want to ask is, what is the current transfer mechanism and what can be done to improve? Thank you.
Thank you very much. And from my side, there is almost nothing. Because all of you, I'm sure, have just simply asked the questions that I wanted to ask.
Good.
And then they are all gone.
Very good.
Good.
But I think it's probably the issues that we face with is that there are some work that is done by other departments which impact on the Home Affairs. And the Home Affairs can only do a bit of that, and the rest must be done by others. Then what is important then would be to know the relationship that they have with such departments, especially what Honorable Sope was asking.
Okay.
I mean Honorable Mkhali.
Okay.
Yes, was asking is that you have got the trade and industry dealing with issues of cross-border trade and all that, and then comes the SMMEs. We may be speaking about all the immediate countries like Swaziland, Lesotho, Botswana, and then how do we then collaborate in a manner that says that we do achieve what we need to achieve. Then the other issue relates to a similar question, of course, that Honorable Khalid has raised about the number. I think Honorable Hussein also talked about something around 67 or 76,000 of migrants, 62,000 of migrants. And the issue is that we know that this particular policy seeks to separate them, get asylum and separate, and then genuine economic migrants separate and then with all the processes of actually dealing with them, documenting. But the issue, of course, that comes up is this separation process. Unlike now, where all of them are just abusing the same regime, and then we're talking about 62,000 asylum seekers, when actually we may be talking about less than 10% of them, and then the rest being migrants that requires a different system altogether to manage them. So the question will then come in is how do we separate them? The asylum seekers is definitely a domain of home affairs, but then the economic migrants then is something else. It's something else. They come here for other things that home affairs is not interested in. You can only just manage them as they are presented to you, or themselves present that they've got employment here and there, or blah blah blah. So that separation and the management of it, how are we going to really achieve it? Welcome, Honorable Kay. You may proceed to respond to the questions, but exclude those political comments that they are not meant for you to respond on them.
Okay.
No, there's nothing obvious, because when you said it, then you had an intention why you are saying it. Okay, thank you very much. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Indeed, I will only deal with things that I know how to know better how to deal with this, Chair. The others, I really don't know. Chairperson, we have a team here. The questions with regard to the Border Management Authority, I will ask Mr. Africa to deal with those ones. There are some on policy that CISA will deal with. Mr. Masana will deal with issues with regard to, as Chair, when Honorable Chair opened with regard to our infrastructure and things like that. So, and we have legal people here as well to deal with it. But I will deal with some of the ones, the more generic ones that I can deal with, Chair. Chairperson, with regard to Honorable Dambuza, on the issue of Vision 2063, indeed, when we, and this is linked to the questions that were asked by the other honorable members as well with regard to the African Union migration policy and free movement on the continent. We had, for this past year, Chairperson negotiated the text of the free movement protocol, as well as the migration policy for Africa on the continent within the AU. There were about four or five meetings that were called, where countries or experts, migration experts, converged on to discuss the issues of migration on the continent. Chairperson, as South Africa, I do not think that we can fault, or we disagree with Vision 2063 and the vision of a Pan-Africa and the vision of an economic a prosperous Africa. And that is what Vision 2063 depicts, and we are in full agreement with it, and we believe that as African countries, when we work together on these matters, we would be able to achieve this ideal of being a prosperous Pan-African single economy on the continent that would prosper. The talks of prosperity of Africa. But where we do have some issues is with the
with the, what can I call it, with the strategy or the route to get there. So we are arguing that when we do look at how we move to, now free movement is the cornerstone of reaching that, of on the continent is the cornerstone of reaching that prosperity or that ideal state in 2063. But we are arguing that the strategy to get there needs to be measured. We need to take into account the risks that free movement poses. We need to have a look at are there institutional capacities in place in countries to be able to ascertain who their citizens are? Do they have a travel document? We are raising basically, Chairperson, the issues of security with related to free movement of people. We are also raising the issue of the issue that Honorable Dambuga raises with regard to economic disparity and the fact that if you should have free movement now, there would be a movement south to those economies which people think we are already seeing. And we would be reaching saturation points in those countries very soon if we have not yet, and that could lead to underdevelopment and not development for some countries. Then the whole issue of burden sharing that Honorable Dambuza also raises. How do we make sure that we do not have a beeline to certain countries only that would lead to that? So those are the issues that we were raising in those fora in South Africa. Not that we support the vision, but it is how we get there to that vision. And we raised the issues of that there needed to be what we call certain preconditions that needs to exist before free movement can take place on the continent. For instance, we have certain countries that do not know who their nationals are. They don't. They don't issue, they don't have national population registers. They don't know who their nationals are. These nationals would move to our country. How would we know who those nationals are if their own country doesn't know it? So there is a prerequisite that we should have, or we, as South Africa, we have said, the prerequisite that we need is that we would require countries to have national population or registration regimes to register their own citizens, so that we are sure that in Africa that every person is registered and we know who our children are. In fact, I just read an article yesterday in the newspaper on I think it's the Kanu tribe in Ethiopia, where there are people that are in countries that are totally not registered. They don't appear on any national population register. How those countries plan for services for them goes beyond that. But you need to have those population registered. That is the one prerequisite. The other prerequisite that we require is for everyone to have a travel document to be able to travel. We need to have harmonization of immigration laws is another one. We need to have systems, an integrated immigration system across the continent, so that we would know high risk from low risk travelers and as they are moving on the continent. So those were basically the what we call the preconditions, and we still believe that these are required before you can have safe, orderly migration on the continent. You cannot have it as within the current regime, the disparate regimes that exist currently in Africa. Of course, that was not bought into by most of the other African countries, because they believe that within their economic bloc, they already have free movement with all its problems that it has. But the issue, or the main issue here was free movement at all costs will deal with the security issues that's related with it later. We are arguing now that we need to deal with those issues before we can have complete free movement in the country. So those were the positions, the opposing positions that we had within those 4 hours we discussed free movement within the continent. And we will expand more on this when we come to meet with the portfolio committee to discuss in particular the free movement protocol, which is in the next your next meeting, Chairperson. I think that we have been invited to, we will discuss this in depth. So clearly we have the whole issue of burden sharing, the whole issue of unequal development that exists in Africa. And we also said, and which is a prerequisite anyway by the African Union as well in terms of Vision 2063, it's the issue of silencing the guns in Africa. Because when we would silence those guns, it would stop forced migration in Africa, we believe. And forced migration is one of the serious concerns, and that leads to to the movement of refugees from one country to another in Africa. So there are those what we had called preconditions that needs to exist, and we still hold to those to that position. That if we do have talk to free movement in Africa, we subscribe to it, we will implement it, but we will implement it when we are sure that with country A, you have a population register, we have harmonized laws, we have systems that talk to each other, we will implement with that country. If we have with this country, we have these conditions, we will implement. That we do it in the secure manner that we are talking about when we talk about implementing free movement in Africa. Chairperson, the issue of also raised by Honorable Dambuza on how do we fast track the legislative amendments because of complaints by foreign nationals. Some of these they are already Honorable Dambuza, as we have mentioned when we started the presentation, that there are already those that we can implement without requiring legislative framework, because the current legislative framework allows for it, and we can do it. Those have already been done. The others where there are complaints, it would be difficult to implement it without having a legislative framework to do that. And also, we had reviewed our policy, taking into account one, the shortcomings of the current legislation or policy. Secondly, complaints and issues that we've been having from foreign nationals over the years on some of the migration, the red tape and the barriers that they have recognized over the past years, and also the current reality of where migration is going to, not only in the continent but internationally, and that we need to align ourselves with that. So we have taken into account those particular issues. Chairperson, if I may move to Honorable Wilson, I never understand this comment that South Africa is introducing or making it more difficult for people to come into South Africa. Chairperson, I believe even under our current legislation, and most of what is in our current legislation, we will be keeping in the new legislation because it's groundbreaking, and we believe that it does help us to be able to encourage people to come to South Africa. Firstly, I believe, or we as the department believe, that we have a visa for every occasion in South Africa. In fact, to such an extent that we are even being said, you are too open by some. If you speak to some South Africans, they will tell you, why do you have a visa for this? Mm-hmm. Why do you have a visa for them? You are exposing us to risk. Let me say, Chairperson, that in South Africa, in fact, I think Mauritius, or the example used, implemented this even after. We do have what we call a financially independent visa in South Africa. Anyone with more than 12 million can come to South Africa and be financially independent and apply for permanent residence and will be given permanent residence, Chairperson, because we believe that that person would be able to boost the economy and he is bringing that money into the country. We are already issuing this, and we're issuing, in fact, during the 2014-16 financial year, we issued 196 of such permanent residence visas. A lot of money that is coming in. What we do, Chairperson, there were more applications than this, but because of our risk management of migration, we make sure that we only give those to those that we cannot give it to drug lords wanting to bring money into this country. So we check them, we find out where you get your money from, we consult. That is why the requirement is that people apply from their home country before for visas before they come to South Africa, because we can then do the necessary checks in those countries. Talk to chambers of commerce, is this a bona fide business person, speak to the government authorities in terms of his bona fides and all of those. And once we have ascertained that they do have this money, is transferred into the country, will be transferred into this country, we issue this. Chairperson, we also have what we call a retirement visa in South Africa. And we attract a lot of money with that, Chairperson, because people need to be able to prove that they have more than, I think, an income of more than 37,000 rand per month, and also what other assets and stuff do they bring into the country. So that also, Chairperson, boosts our economy in that way. And we had, for retirement, we had 1,231 applications for those. So we have them, and we issue them. But have a look at the skewedness, Chairperson. That most of the applications, 15,965 over that same period, is for spousal, is marriage visa. So there is a huge disparity if you have a look, there's a huge slant when you have a look at the type of visas that people apply for. There's no real red tape over there. If you can show you have this money, if you can show it comes from legitimate sources, you are able to, you are then given these visas. So we do believe, Chairperson, that even under our current policy, that we are definitely not creating any barriers, nor do we intend to with the new policy, and that we are open for business in South Africa, as long as you are the right person to do business with.
Do the right things.
And do the right things. Chairperson, with regard to backlog on PR applications, I must raise this, Chair. We don't have the only visa, or we have different types of, and maybe Honorable Nisi, I'll also talk to some of the issue that you raised with regard to our risk rating. We do have certain visas currently that's taking long for us to process, and those are PR applications in the category of spouses and in the category of relatives. And that's our biggest number of applications. Now, in those categories, Chairperson, all of us in this room know the high prevalence of marriages of convenience in South Africa. And also, all of us know in this room that we've only got so many immigration inspectors in South Africa. I think about 700 now. So for me, I have to investigate every marriage to make sure that we do not issue permanent residence to people that do not deserve it and people that do not even live with those spouses and is only married on paper. And those are the people we investigate, and those are the people I send out officials to go and look and verify their marriages, and that takes time with the current staffing that I have, Chester. The others, extraordinary skills, retired, business, worker, financially independent. We issue those visas now within 4 months, 3 months, 4 months, because they are low risk. We are able to check them out, and they are linked to development of our economy, and we are able to do that. So when you talk about a backlog, it is in those areas, the high-risk areas, Honorable Mnisi, where we have this bogus marriages and things like that that we need to work on, that we have a backlog. What we are currently thinking of, not thinking of doing, what we are currently going to do, Chairperson, is to give notice that those types of visas are now going to take a longer time for us to process, so that we don't have the issue of the turnaround time is not being met. Because they are high-risk visas, and we need to investigate each one of them. Chairperson, with regard to the asylum seeker centers at the borders. Indeed, this was it is a contentious issue, always was a contentious issue, and we had tried to, and the concerns that are raised by Honorable Wilson is valid, and I think a lot of other people are raising concerns, but we are aware of these concerns, and we have mitigating steps that we are going to take to see that we mitigate these things. Firstly, the whole issue relates to the mixed migratory flow that Honorable Wilson and Honorable Chair spoke about, the 63,000 applications, for instance. Now, within that 63,000, only about 5% of them, and even less, are genuine asylum seekers. The rest of those people, if you ask them, why have you come to South Africa, they say, I'm here to look for a job. Now, those would be what we call manifestly unfounded cases. So these are not really people seeking protection, but they are economic migrants. Our policy here exactly intends to disaggregate that mixed migration field. And we also find that the majority of the 63,000, in fact, close to 80% of them, come from SADC, our neighboring country. So that is why the policy document talks to a SADC permit. A SADC permit that will deal with low and unskilled labor migration within the region. And we believe that that will take out a huge chunk of people from the asylum. It will disaggregate that mixed migratory flow. And we will find that really only those people that have come from the Horn of Africa, come from those countries in conflict, those are the ones that will be coming in and really applying for asylum, if we can have a policy solution for low and unskilled labor within the region. And because of that, we believe that the people that will be going to these centers, and anyway they come through our northern border, would be able to go to these centers where they would be able to apply for asylum. At these centers, we do not intend to keep people there for months or for years, as currently it takes for us to process that. Because firstly, we've done the desegregation. There is a solution for work for economic migrants. Those that are really applying for asylum is in the minority. We would be able to have the resources to deal with their applications for asylum quicker. and we would, and that relates as well to the issue of the right to work and not the right to work. We believe that as an asylum seeker, you have temporary status in South Africa. So you are here to claim asylum. Whilst we look at your claim for asylum and we are able to deal with it in a reasonable time frame, we believe that it is not necessary for you to work or to study or to run a business in South Africa, because if you are a failed asylum seeker, you would need to return to your country. Or if you are a refugee, declared a refugee, you can then proceed into South Africa and you can work, study, and do all of that that needs to be done. We also believe that because of that desegregation, we would be able to deal with them quicker. There would be a quick turnaround time at that. Now, there would be cases, Chairperson, where it would take longer for us to confer refugee status or deny, where we need to do investigations, where we need to consult home country, where we need to do more in-depth work. In such cases where we take, for instance, let's say more than 2 months or 3 months to do, those asylum seekers will be issued with a Section 22 that says that they have the right to work or to study or whatever. It will not be blanket now where anyone that applies for asylum can work, study, and do business in South Africa. No, it will be only for those where it takes us some time to be able to ascertain your claim for asylum. So it won't be blanket as we currently have it. Chairperson, if there are emergency situations in countries, another law kicks in, not the Refugee Act. There's Disaster Management Act, there's all of those that kick in. If there is a mass migration of people from our neighboring countries, those laws kick in and people are dealt with in terms of those particular laws. And so it is not in terms of it might be part of it, but it is not, it won't be the Refugee Act that says, you guys are refugees, we will give you refugee status or not, we'll keep you here on a farm, we'll start camps, we'll do this. That's not the Refugee Act that will deal with that particular issue. But the legislation dealing with disaster management. Chairperson, emigration, what is the intention of managing emigration? Honorable Wilson, yeah, it's a new area for us, and we are really also in the conceptualization phase of that. But we do believe, and we have learned in our studies, and when we did some comparative studies, that other countries are utilizing the emigre community, the emigre community, to bolster their fiscus, and they are using them for development purposes in their country. For instance, there's a whole lot of countries that only through the diaspora they are able to raise remittances up to billions, trillions of rand for their economy. That is money that's being sent home from people working abroad back to their country. So it's a huge amount of money that gets back to those countries in the form of remittances. And we believe that as South Africa, we can tap into that and be able to manage that through our diaspora that's abroad. Then there's always also the issue of knowledge networks. It's a bit intangible, but it's critical for us in terms of managing knowledge and transferring knowledge from those that are abroad and coming in. The South African that has just started on, what's the famous one with the battery?
Elon Musk,
for instance. It would be excellent if we could get Elon Musk to start a factory to produce such batteries in South Africa, rather than producing them somewhere else in the world. The batteries that he has actually conceptualized. So there's always that that potential to get your diaspora to invest back into your country, and also able to leverage of the remittances and other expertise that they. How we are going to manage this now? Please, Honourable Wilson, if you could give us some time to conceptualize that. We are thinking about that. There will be a document. It's one of those outstanding documents. We are in discussions with Durko on the matter, with Brent South Africa on the matter, to see how we can really leverage of our diaspora that's living abroad. The kind of questions we would be asking would really not be invasive questions, and it would be similar to a person that leaves your employee and you have what you call it an exit interview with him. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me why are you leaving? What are the reasons you are leaving? So that we could also see what pushes our people out, and how we can, through policy, maybe correct that if there's a requirement for that. So it would be those kinds. And where are you going? Where are you going to invest? Are you investing? Is it a job? Are you good? You know, those types of questions that we would be asking. Chairperson, with regard to the marriage clearance certificate, I leave that difficult one to see to answer. Chair.
Just before you move on, the very question that you just come off of was saying, I think you also need to speak to circumstances or whatever that happens in foreign countries, where sometimes you find that our citizens are at risk, and then there is a need for the country to evacuate its citizens out of that kind of situation. What is there that is required that this country should be knowing, and then so that they are able to actually account for those citizens? I think if we could just speak to that.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, that's the important, I think the other important of these issues of knowing where your diaspora resides, and in terms of giving them consular services, one, because they are still your nationals and you still need to look after them. And you need to have them registered wherever they are in the world so that you can give them that consular service. Chair would recall when we had in Nigeria, when the church collapsed, we were not sure how many South Africans are there, because we didn't have such a register, and there was no requirement for people to register and say, I will now be visiting that country and I'll be staying there. When people migrate, they go to certain countries. When natural disasters happen, we are not able to assist them because we do not have these registers. So that is also one important way of managing your migration, not only to leverage off them economically, but also for their protection, and to be able to give them services, to grant them services. Thank you, Chair, for reminding me of that. Chairperson, the cost projection on the bill, I'll just leave those issues. I think elsewhere the rest of the team would know that they need to deal with those. Honourable Wilson, the last issue, yes, we are consulting with organizations that deal with refugees. They are under that category of human rights organizations and things like that. We are in the process of talking to them and having dialogues with them on these issues. Chair, Honourable Mkaliti, no right to work or study, what does it mean? I think I had explained that. The issue around the refugee reception offices as well, I think I dealt with that. With regard to Moore, Chairperson, the refugee center in Moore, this is what's happening currently. We have a refugee center out in Musina. We have a refugee center in Pretoria, the Desmond Tutu Refugee Center. We have a refugee center in Durban, and then we have the one here in Cape Town. Now, those applicants, first-time applicants that go to Durban, are the ones that come in through the north, but they walk past Mufina. They go past Pretoria. Why do they go past Pretoria, Chairperson? Because we have a new system in at Desmond Tutu. So we are able to take your fingerprints, we are able to do those pre-checks and all of that. So they they don't want that. So they now go to Durban where they believe you can easily now, there are not all of these checks and balances, you can easily now apply for asylum in Durban. That is why we now have congestion in Durban. We will be rolling out these. We are in the process of rolling out all of these things we have at Desmond Tutu to all of those centers. So I don't know where will they be going to now, but they will have to come to our centers and all centers now. And that is why we currently have a huge congestion in Durban rather than at our other centers. Because as we introduce more stringent measures, as we introduce more controls, they move to areas where they think it would be easier to be able to deal with. But we'll be getting to Moore Street soon, Honorable Nkalipi, with our processes and our machines that we have that assist us in this particular end. In Bramfontein, Honorable Nkalipi, we need to speak maybe after the meeting, because we do not have a center in Bramfontein. And I would like to know this building that you are, maybe it's one of those bogus home affairs offices that we have that we need to look into.
Dr. Bongo, eh?
Do we have the issue around the first safe country or engagement with the EU? I think I dealt with this with regard to
EU.
So yeah, the EU, I'm sorry, that we do have those discussions on migration, and we are seeing how we can deal with the challenges that and the threats that derive from that. And how do we deal with only employing foreigners and problems with African migration? Chair, and this is something which you would expect the major reason why you have an immigration law is actually to protect your citizens. That's why you have an immigration law. You make sure that it is your citizens that are firstly catered for. If there are jobs, citizens must be catered for first. Anyone else needs to apply for a visa to be able to work, to study or whatever in South Africa. So you need first to cater for your citizens before the rest. And really with our policy document, we are trying to bring that back into what migration policy should be. It is to protect your citizens. It is to make sure that your citizen is first catered for before anybody else. And that there are certain rules that apply to such people. In the South African context, it would seem as if this has become a right even to non-South Africans. And what we are trying to do here is to get that balance between South Africans first, and we need to see that they have jobs, that they can study at our schools, that they have opportunity, and everyone else that comes from, that's not from South Africa, there is an immigration law that would allow you to be in South Africa legally, but you need to apply for this, and there are certain requirements for that. That is why you have immigration legislation, and we are trying to through this honorable to be able to deal with the issues of African, what you call the problems with African migration, so that we are sure that we don't reach a situation where we become saturated, where when we talk about migration in the continent, it should be to the benefit of all and not to the detriment of some.
Mm.
and we need to look at it in that particular way. The issue raised around Honorable Rakuti, the current holders of PR in the country, let's say for argument's sake, we have the new law that comes now. We don't issue permanent residence anymore, but now long stay visas. Our law does not apply retrospectively. So those that have PR will remain with PR, and they will have to follow the processes as according to the old law. When the law comes into operation, anyone applying for permanent residence would now have to apply for a long stay visa in South Africa. With bogus doctors, our immigration white paper argues right through the need for collaboration, the whole of government approach to managing migration. Because the Department of Home Affairs cannot on its own manage migration. If we have to issue a work visa to a doctor, it should be because the Department of Health has done their check. That the Department of Health has checked whether this person does indeed have a degree or a qualification, and does indeed see that they write our relevant entry tests in South Africa because the Medical Council requires that. That they are then given a certificate to be able to practice in South Africa, then only the Department of Home Affairs should be able to issue them with a visa to be in South Africa. That kind of policy coherence and synergy does not exist in South Africa currently. And that is what makes us weak. And we need to have this all of government approach where these issues, these synergy issues can be discussed with. For instance, if you speak to the Department of Education or the Department of Health, they will tell you, Home Affairs is doing, it's because of Home Affairs that we, all of our beds in Limpopo are taken over by foreigners. Mm-hmm. Our whole hospital is full of foreigners. Is it immigration? No, I don't believe it's immigration. Is there policy? What does their policy say about services to foreigners? Do they have policy around that? Yes. How do they deal with those issues? Because if you say to me that it's because of Home Affairs and it is Home Affairs causing that problem, then I need to close all the ports of entry, and no one comes into the country then. But people do come into the country. They come as visitors. But if someone that comes as a visitor, can he then just walk into a hospital and say, I'm here, operate on me? Or I'm here as a visitor, I want to deliver my baby in your hospital. Can that happen, or is there a policy disjuncture here? Is there synergy, is there hiatus in policy in that area? Can someone that has a visitor's visa that says to you, I am coming to your country as a tourist, suddenly pitch up at a high school and say, hey, I'm here, I want to write exams, I want to be at this school. How does that happen? There's no, definitely no policy coherence in this. And our document argues that we need to have an all or whole of government approach in managing migration so that there is this policy and legislative coherence that we are talking about.
What about the pastors?
Chairperson, exactly. You need to ask the question, with the migration of certain categories of people, who manages that? And if no one manages that, shouldn't there be someone in the state managing that?
and only then would we be, because Home Affairs would not be able to know that. We are working with DDI and Labour now. We are working very closely together, Chairperson, and we are now able to see how did we land where we are currently with migration in the country. Now, if anybody wants to apply for a business visa, they need first to apply to a DTI. Mm-hmm. Now DTI does all of those checks. Mm-hmm. They go to the business, they find, but there's no business here. Mm-hmm. They ask for books to check their income and expenditure. There are no books, so if the books are given, it's read books. So now they say to Home Affairs, no, don't issue a visa, this business doesn't exist, it's a shell company, there's no premises, there's no this, there's no that. Now we work with labor. People apply for work permits. Skills. Labor says, no, but there are some skills in South Africa for this. Labor now says to us, but no, we visited the site over there. This company is employing 80% foreigners. So now we see that we are now starting to believe, we are seeing the benefits of departments working together in managing migration, and we are able to close the loops. With regard to, Chair, I'm coming to an end. Honorable Nisi, low-risk and high-risk migrants, for instance, we would say, within the immigration environment, I only have so much money to do deportation. So, firstly, I need to speak to my neighbors. I need to say to Zimbabwe, look, I'm just using as an example, please. It can be any other country. Lesotho. Yeah. Lesotho. I allow your people to come into the country without a requirement of a visa. But if I should continue doing that, you've got to promise that if your people overstay in our country, or they become illegal or undocumented in our country, that you will take them back at your cost. Because now it will make them responsible for the citizens, and also it would get them to also manage migration. Because currently they're not. The people in South Africa is poor. It's their issue. Let them deal with it. So you get them then to buy in. So we have these what we call returns agreements, where we have people agree to, okay, let's help each other manage migration. The document, the white paper, just as it argues that migration is not the responsibility of Home Affairs alone, and it can't be managed by Home Affairs alone, it also argues that migration cannot be managed by one country alone. It needs to be managed in partnership, and it needs to be managed through agreement with your neighbors and other countries. And this is what it speaks to when we talk about agreements that we have with this country. So with this little money that I have, we now need to say, if we are going to deport people, who do we deport first with this with the money that you have? And then we need to risk rate that. And we would say that those foreigners that are currently being released from our prisons, that have been arrested for crimes, and then your ordinary chap that just came through the port of entry, he overstayed for 3 days, he's not a criminal, he's an ordinary person, like the two of us, risk-wise, which one is a higher risk? For me, it's the prison. So the person that is released from prison, I would say, my funds that I have, those are that first priority, get them out of the country upon release. And the other guy, I would go to his country and negotiate and say, listen, man, there's individual X here. He's overstayed in the country. Can you guys just arrange with your embassy to get him back to your country? So that is what we call
the risk rating of managing migration. Do we consider reviewing the old conventions? I'm sure Honorable Nisi is talking to some of the conventions in the migration space. We are discussing this with DERCO. We have not really felt that there is. We do believe, Honorable Nisi, that we find ourselves in the situation in South Africa because of a lack of coherent immigration policy in the past, where we are currently. But we do believe that with coherent policy, we can manage refugees coming into the country, because we do believe that within the majority of asylum seekers coming into South Africa, I said 80% to 90% from them come from our neighboring country. The most stable region you can get in Africa is SADC. So there's no need. So it's an economic issue. Deal with the economic issue, we'll be left with a handful of real refugees coming from countries where there is or refugee producing countries, if I may call it that. And we do believe that we would be able to manage that without having to go and look at refugee camps or any other as such. And we might still be able to do it by staying within the ambit of the conventions that currently exist. Should it show something else, then we would need, of course, to review. And policies are there to review annually or as and when it is required to do that. Honorable Fifth, CISA will deal, Honorable Nisi, with regard to the major changes from green to white paper. Problems with implementation, Honorable Fifth, indeed. That is why our policy, I think it's the first policy document that actually has an appendage on that talks to implementation. And that is why you will see from our presentation, we are dealing with, we have plans and we are conceptualizing and we are dealing with all of these difficult issues so that when the law comes, we would be able to implement. So there's pre-work that is being done. The skills transfers issue you will also talk about. Chair, the issue that you raised in conclusion, the issue that you raised with regard to the cross-border association, how do we collaborate, I think that is, I answered that when we said that we need a whole of government approach with regard to this so that we could have policy and legislative coherence, and I spoke to the issue of the mixed migration flow. Chair, could I ask Elroy then to deal with the issues related to the border management policy?
Yeah, I think they've got until quarter past at most, all of them.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought I should maybe start off by taking 30 seconds to indicate to members that right now the Department of International Relations, they have a voluntary initiative or service called ROSA, R-O-S-A. It stands for the Registration of South Africans Abroad. So basically what they are doing with that service is to encourage every single South African when you travel abroad for any purpose to register with that department. And the primary purpose is really to provide a service to South Africans in any eventuality or in crisis. So I think I'll just stop by sharing that information. That's indirectly linked to what the colleagues have raised. Chairperson, I think that the first comment to make on the BMA is just to reinforce what the acting DG has said by locating the BMA within the white paper. And the way to understand that relationship is to reinforce the point made by the acting DG that says the white paper on international migration is primarily a policy instrument of government that indicates new areas or revised areas of policy intervention. Okay, so that's really what we're doing. We are charting new ground, we are revising existing ground, we are charting and explaining, giving greater policy clarity in key areas. Now, how that links to the BMA is that the BMA becomes part of the implementation machinery. It becomes part of the execution architecture of this white paper. It's one of the instruments that we use to implement this white paper. So I thought it's important just to understand that link. So, Chairperson, the first question posed by yourself, in our presentation we say that the BMA will be established in 2019. What do we mean by this, and how do we define this implementation? So, Chairperson, the first comment to make here is that the Department of Home Affairs, unfortunately, we have pronounced on the establishment of the BMA on multiple occasions, and we've needed to revise that particular establishment date on a number of occasions. I want to give one example. In 2015, 2 years ago, the Department of Home Affairs, through my office, we undertook and prepared something called a Border Management Authority business case. We prepared a business case in 2015. And in fact, we did that with the assistance of National Treasury. In that 2015 document, we pronounced and anticipated that the BMA would be established by April this year, 2017. By April 2017, we were very far from establishing the BMA. So what do we understand by establishing the BMA? I think there are a number of requirements, and I simply want to highlight two requirements based on our understanding of the establishment. The first understanding, Chairperson, correctly as you've indicated, is that all the regulatory preconditions need to be in place. We need law. There needs to be a law that establishes this authority. As we are sitting here right now, we do not have a piece of legislation. So that is very important. There are a number of other important points. Even if Parliament passes a bill by December, we can't go ahead and just do all sorts of things. There are a few other things we need to do. We need to have a proclamation from the President that activates or brings into force that particular piece of legislation. That can take a week, it can take 6 months, it can take longer. So that is the first thing. We need a proclamation that brings the act into force. A second thing that is a bit unique with the BMA, we will need a second proclamation that will transfer functions from other relevant departments to the BMA. Members will recall that in the BMA bill that we deliberated upon here, we don't list methodically in a long list these are the functions. So we are going to use a proclamation of the President to transfer those functions. So that is the second regulatory instrument that we need. So the first precondition constitutes the regulatory precondition. A second precondition, and I'm going to end on this point, on this question, is that we have had deliberations, Chairperson, with National Treasury, and we have tried very hard to put forward a perspective that says, National Treasury, please give us an allocation, fiscal funding allocation for the BMA that will start in April 2018, next year. And after lengthy discussions and interactions with them, we have basically reached a point where Treasury is saying to us that unfortunately we're unable to come up with a different view. Treasury has indicated to us that they can only allocate money from the fiscus to organs of state that are formally established at a particular point in time. So right now, we have participated in what is called the medium-term expenditure framework process, the MTF process for next year. And because we do not have a BMA bill, they are saying they are unable to make a formal budgetary allocation for the BMA. Even if law comes into place in a month or two, they are working on the current reality right now. And on the current reality, it will basically be illegal for them to set aside money because there's no legal basis for that. So what all of this means, Chairperson, is that right now we are anticipating that we will get a formal funding allocation from the fiscus to the BMA by April 2019. That is what it means. So, Chairperson, that is a long explanation why we are now talking about the 2019. But maybe the last point to make on this is that if the bill comes into place, we really want to use next year to run a number of what we call BMA pilot projects, because we believe we need to start experimenting and start piloting and doing a number of innovative things. So already we begin to identify some ports of entry where we can pilot this approach.
Just a second, Elroy. I thought that we had some vehicle that was actually doing the work of the BMA for now, coordinating. Is that one not a legal vehicle that the allocation can be made for that? What is their excuse in relation to that? Does it have limitations? And what is the story?
Thanks, Chairperson. No, you are correct. We currently do have such a vehicle, and that vehicle is actually the project management office within the Department of Home Affairs that I manage. So it's a project office within the Department of Home Affairs. The Department of Home Affairs does give an allocation to the project office, but the project office cannot use funding to, for example, to start making appointments, because you can only make appointments against a structure that is legally established. So that's the quandary we find ourselves in. And that is why I'm saying, Chairperson, that we want to use next year as an opportunity to run a number of BMA pilot projects, but we will not be able to do that formal transition and start doing, strictly speaking, BMA things in the name of the BMA. Thanks, Chairperson. Then, Honourable Dambuza, your question, or you made a comment that says national president's view, the BMA can only be funded over the long term. So again, I think it links to the question that I've responded to, say that in terms of the budgeting process for next year, we have already, as Home Affairs, put in an initial request for funding for the BMA, but we've put in a request for the BMA, as I said, starting in 2019. But for next year, we have also asked for some more money to support us with these pilot projects and to do some preparatory work to prepare for the establishment of the BMA. So I think on the one hand, we would probably agree with Treasury that the BMA must be established from the fiscus in the long term. I think the only qualification we would make is that the money, we would need money sooner to finalize all the preparatory work. So the funding needs to start flowing as early as next year to start doing the pilot projects and to start laying the ground for all of these things. The second last question from Honorable Hussein, on BMA costing projections. Honorable Hussein and members, I refer to a business case that was completed for the BMA in 2015. And I indicated that this business case was undertaken by National Treasury, by the Government Technical Advisory Center, GTAC. It's an advisory component within Treasury. In that business case, we undertook extensive budget and costing analysis of a border control in South Africa. And one of the conclusions that we reached, I was just looking at the business case now, one of the conclusions we reached is that we know exactly how much money is spent on border control in South Africa right now. As we sit in here, we spend plus minus 3.8 billion rand in the front line. And also that 3.8 billion rand is primarily used to fund and support the 72 ports of entry and roughly the 8,900 staff that we have at the 72 ports of entry. So we have done the homework. We have categorized them by department, we've categorized them by ports of entry, We categorize it by back office functions, front office functions, so we have done that work. To supplement this work of 2015, we have just completed a couple of months ago, and Acting GG referred to this, we completed something called a BMA blueprint, and we've also prepared something called a BMA roadmap. In those two documents, again, we have done detailed projections on what the costing is that we think we need over the short to long term. So for example, in the next 15 years, our projection is by 2032, we will need, on an annual basis, we will need 10.5 billion rand per annum. And that 10.5 billion rand will be required to support a number of Border Guard officials, totaling about 21,000 Border Guard officials. We have broken down that per phase. The acting DG said we've broken up this rollout roadmap into about six different phases. For every single phase, we've costed this the BMA. So we believe that we've done the homework, Chair, and I'm sure you know we can find a way of sharing some of this information. The last question was regarding from Honorable Raputi from regarding what are the challenges we are experiencing in the NCOP. I thought Mr. Mackay, the acting DG, maybe touched on this. So simply to say, Honorable Raputi, that on the 12th of September, we had our first briefing as a department with the Select Committee on Social Services. That was the first formal briefing. In that briefing, I'm not saying anything new, in that briefing, the chairperson of the committee told the committee that they had received a request from National Treasury to make a presentation on the BMA, and the chairperson ruled to say that this may be accommodated at a later point. So as a department, we are not clear what Treasury wants to brief the committee on. But the final point, again to reinforce what the acting DG has said, we received the program on Friday. Today is Tuesday. Last Friday, we received the fourth quarter program of the Select Committee. And in that program, taking us up to December, there is no provision made for any discussion on the BMA. But we are aware, we've been told that the BMA bill has been published for public comment. And of course, this is of concern to us that it is not it doesn't appear to be on the set of priorities. Thank you, Chairperson.
Then your business case of 2015, was it subjected to some review, adjustments, or whatever? Because surely now that you've got 2 years down the line, certain aspects may need to be relooked and adjusted. And let me just hear from you. When you are done, then you pass it to the next one.
Chairperson, the simple answer is yes, it has been reviewed. It's been reviewed in these other documents that we spoke about, the BMA blueprint and the BMA roadmap. So we use the opportunity to update all those figures and to do new costing and new projections around the establishment of the BMA.
400.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, Honorable Members. The acting DG has asked me to respond to three issues. The first one that I'll respond to, the changes that we have effected, which were not covered in the green paper, that are now covered in the white paper. The first change, Chair, there was an outcry when we released the green paper. The comment that we received was like, the processing centers that we're introducing, we were introducing the camps. That is those were the comments that we received. However, the Green Paper never mentioned the camps. What was included in the Green Paper was administrative detention. After engaging with the human rights organizations, we removed that because it was sending a wrong message. However, it's important to explain that the point that we're trying to make is there are people who are coming into the country they may not be coming now in numbers, but there will be people who may come into the country armed. People who are coming from the war zone. Now, how do you deal with that, with those kinds of asylum seekers who are coming to the country? Do you just say they must just integrate themselves, or you process them in the same way we are processing the vulnerable groups? So that's the argument we're trying to make, but we thought, let us not put it at a policy level, it's something that can be addressed at an administrative level. So that was point number one. Point number two about the processing centers also was the issue of free movement for asylum seekers. That the paper at that point did not make provision, as the acting DG was saying, that in cases where it takes longer for the department to process the claim for various reasons, we will allow asylum seekers to seek employment and study. So the white paper now addressed that paper, the green paper did not address that part. The third issue that we've addressed now, I think DG spoke to it, the issue of removing permanent residence, replacing it with a long-term residence visa. The problem with the current system now is, like, if in your company you advertise for a position, say I'm looking for one accountant, and then 10 accountants apply, then the system does not allow you to select that accountant to fill the position. What it does, it says you must take all of them, because they all qualify. What do I mean by that is, everyone who has been in the country for 5 years qualifies to apply for PR, and in most cases, if the person hasn't committed any serious crime, will qualify for PR. And it goes on, after 5 years, you can apply for citizenship. Now, this approach does not take into consideration the absorption capacity of the country, whether the country can afford to absorb that number of people in the country and also provide. Remember, honorable members, if you're a PR holder, you qualify for social security in this country. Now, the pressure that it brings to our public purse is very huge. So we're also trying to manage that. However, the long-term residence visa, as it's now in the white paper, it does not guarantee that the person will then graduate to citizenship. That's now the difference that you have on the white paper. Chairperson, there is a section that the green paper had not addressed clearly. Green paper. It was not clear in the paper. The enforcement section, the paper was very weak in that area. So as we're engaging with different stakeholders, that issue was raised very strong, especially when we had the conference, the migration conference in March. Then we included the section on enforcement. It takes me to the question on marriage clearance certificate, because it links to enforcement. Now, what are we trying to do with marriage clearance certificate? It's about protection of citizens. We are trying to be proactive, trying to say, if as a South African citizen, if you are marrying a foreign national, we're trying to give a citizen an assurance that the person that you are marrying is legal in the country. We've checked. It's not about punishing people who want to get married in South Africa, but say, If you look at the number of people who are applying for permanent residence in this country, it's very abnormal that South Africa is attracting people. I think it's 35% of people were granted permanent residence in this country between 2014 and 2016. There were those people who applied in the name of love, whether it's marriage or lifetime partnership. And the majority of these cases, even these are the ones we approved, but there was a big number that were rejected because we discovered that these were marriages of convenience or project marriages. So instead of being reactive, we say let us be proactive. We are not regulating marriage per se. Marriage continues as normal, but say before you can enter into this contract, make sure that you, the person that you are getting married to is actually legal in the country. Number two, the issue was raised about priests or religious leaders, their involvement in marriages. We also try to protect them as well. By the time they facilitate matrimonial services, at least they know that the person that is entering into marriage is the person who is legal in the country. The next point that I think DG asked me to respond to is the issue of transfer of skills. The argument that we make in the white paper is, if the purpose of bringing skilled international migrants into the country is to capacitate the country or the state, therefore we need to make sure that when international migrants are in this country, that find mechanically, that is why we say it should not one size fit all. It should be designed in a way that these international migrants, there are international migrants who can have understudies. There are international migrants where you cannot have understudies because of the nature of the work or the environment. You say it must allow that flexibility, basically. The current practice is it is not required in other visas. The only visa where an advocate, Malagasy can confirm this or correct me, is the intra-company visa, which means if a person is being transferred from an international company to work in a South African company, when that person is working under intra-company visa, it's supposed to have an understudy or to transfer skill to a person. The problem that we have, that the way it is not flexible, and we are not able to monitor if that transferring of skills is happening. Hence, we are working with the Department of Labor to develop this new skill transfer mechanism. I think I'll end that.
Just a follow-up on the issue of the gentleman who says that he's married to a South African, and now he's been staying here in South Africa. That was only, is it ketchup or? So what is the record on this?
That foreign national guy who is married to a South African, they are having a baby, they stay together, he is not being assisted by the Home Affairs. Yes.
Sure, if I could respond to that, we are looking, all of these cases, you need to look at the merits of the case. And when you have a look at it, you see either there is, for instance, the is married to a South African. Firstly, we would need to find anybody come, you would need to prove that this is your child. So you would need to have DNA, blood paternity test.
Yeah.
And once the paternity tests are done, because as Home Affairs we are also wary, and that it has happened where people come to the department and say, I'm the father of this child, and it's not really the father of the child. So we need to first check the paternity. If you can prove that this is your child, there is no issue of having the child registered in your name. Now, if you also come and register the child, but you are illegal in the country, we say to you, no, first fix your legal status. So you first got to go and get your legal status fixed so that we can then register you as your child. So it's not that the department would not get to register the child in whoever's name, but it's all of these processes and issues that need to be followed. So one would need to have a look, Chairperson, through yourself, Honourable Member, what are the issues there and what is at stake in that matter. I have sent when you requested, I asked someone to send something to our provincial manager to get the facts around the issue. If we have those facts, I'm sure it will be something we can either resolve or be able to see how we can resolve it.
Well, the fact of the matter is that any person that has got problems of getting registered or whatever, then there must be a problem with that particular person. Otherwise, the system should allow the person to register. And some of them, they really don't speak the truth. That's the problem. And then when these things catch up with them, then they start having some other problems. I know of some number of foreign persons that wanted these visas on the basis of spousal, like as you say. But then when they go to Home Affairs, then they don't want to relinquish their citizenship from where they come. It's an American. He has married a South African, now he says no, then they want to stay together here, then now want to be registered, then has to relinquish the other side in America as a citizen, says no, I don't want to relinquish my citizenship in America. Then they start wanting to do some other funny things now, to be able to be this side. Because now he must just visit for the period and then go back. But then the other one wants the person to come and stay longer. Then, but doesn't want to relinquish the citizenship of the country of origin. So you've got all those kind of things that people are presenting as problems. When and at the end of the day, they really inhibit their progress. And of course, is that like as we sometimes say that. Sometimes people don't present correct information that is required. They are afraid of actually giving the correct information. The person doesn't come from America. He comes from Saudi Arabia. And then he has gone to America on another particular regime there that is recognized in America. Then wants to move from America to South Africa. You see. Then all those kind of things have started creating problems. And but they don't say that I'm from Saudi Arabia. He says I'm from America. When you try and look back, then you start picking up that no, in America you only arrived 2 years back. Then you start picking up problems. Look, anyone that wanted to make a further input?
No.
From the department?
No.
None. Honorable Hussein. This is the point of
Chair, I'll be very brief. I just want to deal with the initial comment around the issue of barriers. You know, the first point that I made, and Mr. McKay said that they don't intend to introduce new barriers with the new policy. It's not true. It's simply not true. If you look at even page 48, and the gentleman next to you spoken about changing the permanent residence to long-term residence or whatever you call it. That on its own is the barrier that I was referring to. So it's not true that we're not going to introduce new barriers. That on its own is the barrier. So I just wanted to make that point here.
Can we explain that, okay, and permanent residence permit and long-term, what's the difference?
One is renewable, the other one is not.
Yes. On the face of it, there is no difference. On the face of it, probably on the finer details.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we are saying, or I'll demonstrate that it is not a barrier. One is a permanent resident if you are 5 years in the country on a worker's visa, for instance, it's kind of automatic. You can apply for permanent residence. If you have not been jailed or whatever, you are sure you'll be a permanent resident, you'll get permanent residence. Stay for another 5 years, you can apply for citizenship status and you can be assured that you are going to become a citizen of South Africa. So we are saying, but that's not how it should be. That people, it should be in the interest of a country of who becomes the citizen. So a country should decide and be able to say who becomes, it shouldn't be this automatic thing. So if there are foreigners in South Africa and they want to stay here for long term, then they can apply for a visa, 20 years stay, 30 years stay, or whatever stay and stay in South Africa, without them having to graduating to become citizens. Should they want to become citizens, there should be another, in terms of the Citizenship Act, there should be procedures there in terms of how do you apply to become a citizen. And that should take care of it there. Now, let me just use an example, Chairperson. Jay, if we have a look at our trends in permanent residence, I said to you that the 35%, let's say that 35, the people that we that are really should become permanent residents, we believe should become permanent residents, and I think it's the category that is referred to by Honorable Hussein, are those that would be economically active and that would contribute to the development of South Africa. Those are your workers, those are your relatives, those are your extraordinary skills, those are your business people, and your financially independent people. Those are the ones that would require that. Now, Jay, if we look at that, they are under 20% of them do apply for permanent residence. Some of them are just happy to stay here on their visa and remain citizens of the country and residents of the country, but they do not apply. So that category of people do not apply for these visas, not because there's a barrier, but purely just because there's no need for them to become permanent residents of South Africa. They are highly mobile, they are able to move here, they are able to move there, to other countries, and they don't need to require for that. Not because there's no barrier, or sorry that there's a barrier, but it's purely out of choice, because those are very, are highly mobile people. Moving from this country, they want to be able to move from here to that country, should there be a job opportunity again, or a business opportunity. So, am I not? We do have those that apply, and our law allows for them to apply. The majority of people, the 35%, the plus the 6%, all of those people apply because they are relatives or they are married to South Africans. And if you go break that down, then you find of the 38% that has applied, of that 38%, 60% of them are fraudulent. So you have a problem with regard to your statistics and who applies for permanent residence in South Africa. I don't think it is because of the barrier, but we need to ask ourselves as a country, are we attracting the right people? Now that is not an answer that Home Affairs must be giving. But someone should be saying, what should we do to be able to attract the right people to South Africa? Is it a barrier in terms of their of them not being able to apply? I do not think so. If you just have a look at the statistics that we get from this category of people. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. No. It's, thank you very much. And I think honourable members, I think the critical point here is the decision to stop abusing the Immigration Act to do what the Citizenship Act should do. To stop that. anything that relates to citizenship, then it must be dealt with within the Citizenship Act. And then the Immigration Act then must just be deal with that migration of people, movement of people, left and right. And then, and that's it. And I think that's what I've heard. And like as I've said, is that the long-term and the permanent residence permit, I think is the definition of those two names. I think it's what, to me, with my third-class English, it looks like it's the same to me. Long-term or permanent residence, all of them they talk about a reasonable time into the future, all of them. Then I think now that the distinction now is the de-linking from that aspect of citizenship, to remove it, and then so that anyone that wants to be a citizen then will be administered differently now through the Citizenship Act. I think it just makes sense not to arrive at citizenship from different routes, and then because like I'm sure honorable members we may need to ask Mr. McKay sometimes to give us statistics of those people that have just graduated into citizenship without the country taking a decision to approve. Those ones that just migrate unknowingly just because of the number of years and whatever, and then they find themselves, you know, without even justifying why they should be in the country, why should be they become citizens or whatever. Just because time has elapsed, then the system just simply approves their new status. If we could just get some sort of that statistics and actually see the possible breakdowns, like as you indicated, that those that are actually graduating on the basis of love only, and nothing else, and no proof that they can sustain their own lives, and then some of them just come and depend on the state right from the first day. Honorable members, I think we are done. We have heard what the department is doing. There is a lot of work that has been done. There is still a lot of work that needs to be done. But then it looks like there may be need of collaborative actions that we need to do in relation to the processing of the BMA. I mean, it's, but I'm aware that the NCOP subcommittee is heading to Canada also in preparation for finalizing the BMA. And it looks like they are going in January. Possibly then they may not finish the bill this year, and it may be coming next year. But I think when the new minister comes in and then you brief her, then probably then there may be some sort of actions that may be taken with the leader of government business.
So condition to the minister.
There is some sort of understanding how we can fast track that. Because honestly speaking, everybody is crying about our borders and all that. I'm sure we have heard the issues that have been raised with the mayor of Johannesburg about foreign nationals that undocumented that he wanted to act, the civil rights organization jumping up, and then so we are not moving in the same direction in relation to undocumented foreign nationals. As a country, we are not moving in one direction. There are those that think that it is okay if they are in here, and then there are those that say it's not okay. There are those that say no, they create problems. I'm sure on your social network this past 2 weeks or so, within the past 2 weeks, you should have seen some other area where it's supported Nigerians beating up subs. Police.
Police were running away.
I think we have seen that, and then.
Speaking in Bandunda.
So, it is problematic.
Yeah.
And then we may not be knowing this is what are some of the causes for that, but one thing for sure is that we need, at any given time, we need to know who is in the country and what is the status of that person. It's a visitor, it's a tourist, it's a contract worker, it's blah, blah, blah. We should be knowing so that we are able to trace those that commit crime, should be able to trace them. But currently, it is not the case. And sometimes it's maybe stealing 1 minute of your time, honorable member. You see, sometimes when certain things happen, and it happens in other people's yards, you don't really have the understanding. You only come to good senses when it happens in your yard. Only when it happens in your yard. And that's why then we are actually talking past each other. When we say we need this BMA, one of the things is to make sure that everybody that comes in the country is documented, is known, why is in the country, how long is going to stay, the citizen or non-citizen, if it's working. All of us, we agree that currently our borders are porous, people are moving through. When we say our borders are porous, we are not necessarily meaning that in the border you've got a home. It is just one of those things. All that we are saying is that the control and the management of people crossing our borders coming to the country, it is not tight. It's not tight, doesn't have people that actually will make sure that they follow those that have crossed without going through the correct offices. Then that needs to happen. Then you need to have an authority that will take accountability on that. Currently, Home Affairs, you know, we can jump high and low to hold it accountable for those that have crossed the borders and not having been apprehended. But then the next thing that comes back to us is give us money to employ more inspectors. Then you are failing to do it. They don't have the numbers to do it. And all of us, we know that the foreign nationals that are undocumented, their main job is just to cross the border safe. Once they reach the center of Bloemfontein, then they are safe. Because Home Affairs doesn't have manpower to actually trace them down there. they don't. If they can just cross the border and move 1 kilometer off the border, it's finished. Then they know they are safe in South Africa. And no SAPS person can stop them and ask an ID on the street. Then our NGOs that are plying their trade in the human rights, then they'll be jumping sky high as well. Or questioning why the police are asking people on the street IDs and all that. You see? That's why I'm saying is that we're talking past each other. And it is a little bit problematic. That's why it is also important, McKay, that we must also explore whether it is not possible moving forward to empower municipal police to have powers of the immigration inspectors that are dealing with, just to have these documents and certificates to be able to say, because all of these people, overnight they are sleeping in the areas of certain municipalities where there are municipal police. And what is there that we expect from the municipalities to do in the time when you don't have capacity to do X, Y, Z? it needs to be explored and then seen in terms of the whole government approach of dealing with this particular matter.
Thank you.
But, thank you very much, Honorable Member.
Thank you.
Good.
And then this brings us to, just before I say so, next week, I think we have the seminar on migration.
When?
It's not next week.
Mm-mm.
Yes, but we are planning that and then we're trying to get the necessary logistics and the speakers that will talk to that. I think the office then would also just brief us on the
step
on what is being planned.
The step capture, another.
Yes, and then
yes.
You'll be ready to brief us next week.
Okay.
Yes, on the preparation. Okay. No, thank you very much, and then let me see you again.
Thank you.
You can see I'm crossing over.
Yeah, they just have pictures of it. Get a digital copy. Thank you.
Okay. Oh,